Blog Talk Radio.
R.I.P.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the hot block commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, sorta like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats, the 4 for 26 saw the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Yes, sir. What up, War Room World? You know what that theme song means. It means you are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Dev Mirak, and I'm joined at the round table by my homie Jimmy the Blueprint. B. Austin is supposed to be in the house with us later, so we'll wait on his arrival. The tournament is over. You know, we're back from Dallas, so we'll discuss everything surrounding the Final Four and a whole lot more. But before we do that, make sure you join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or just join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports so you can join in on these conversations. You don't want to miss it. You can also call us directly, probably in about 30 minutes when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline. As usual, that number is 323-410-0012. We are 5 days out, Jimmy, from the launch of the War Room Sports Podcast Network.
Yes, sir. War Room Sports Podcast Network.
All right. Starting on tax day. Y'all know when tax day is. I shouldn't have to repeat when tax day is. You can go to our website, warroomsports.com, and listen to some of the best talk radio the Internet has to offer. I mean, we got shows on sports, life, culture, entertainment, a whole lot more. So shout out to a couple of our network mates, as we usually give, Roy and Chris of the Broad Street Line, Brandon Pemberton of Sports Track Radio, Shell and the gang of Hoop Girls Radio, Kamal Hilton, North of the Border, our Canadian homie up in Gaffer and Hooligan for all our soccer fanatics. Y'all been asking for it, so y'all better take a listen. And then we got Phil Matic and Survive of Tissue and the Tape. That's hip-hop talk at its finest. And we got a lot. We got a lot more for you. Just not just those shows. We have a lot more for you. Trust
War
and believe
Room
when we tell you.
Sports Podcast Network.
In addition, still, you know, we're still syndicated. We're still on other networks. So don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com. That's 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on FatsRadio.com. That's P-H Fat with a Z on the end, FatsRadio.com. What's good, Jim? What's happening?
Man, you know, man, it's crazy out here. The weather's getting nice, man. You know, scantily clad women out here. It's almost time for NBA playoffs. Baseball has started. So it's a great time of year.
Yo, the way it feels today is one of them days where you take a ride down to the Platte and...
Yo, what year is this? This man said the Platte.
Yes, sir.
Take a ride down to the Platte.
Place called the Platte.
Taking it back to like 93.
If you want to take it back to our HU days, it's one of those days where you just take a trip to the yard, not attend any classes, and watch everybody come outside half naked. It's one of those.
No, that's too close. That's too close to home. That might happen.
Yo.
I was just reminiscing, dog. I don't know what you're talking about. I was just reminiscing.
I'm
talking about
go
future plans. I'm talking about past plans. You're talking about future plans. All right, man. So one more time before we get into this rundown, War Room Sports Podcast Network.
Network.
April
yes.
15th. What is that? Tuesday? Is that Tuesday? I don't
man,
know what
look,
day it is.
Of
Tuesday
course
or Wednesday?
That's the day when it's tax money.
Tax
yeah, money
well,
podcast. Podcast.
My tax money get handled in like February, so I'm not all down with that date. But you guys know when tax day is because y'all some people who wait to the last minute, you know, to do what you got to do. Some of y'all don't do it at all, but that's your problem. Look,
listen, man.
War Room Sports Podcast Network, April 15th. Next
shout
week,
out to Wesley Snipes.
Get on that website. Check out some of those shows because we said so. But you know, it, it's to your benefit. You'll definitely love what we got going on here. All right. So right now, we're going to talk about what's been happening this week while you guys have been on your grind. And as usual, while y'all were on the grind, brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including that NFL Sunday ticket, because we're getting closer and closer to football season again, even though the NFL never wants the season to end. It's a 12-month out-of-the-year cycle these days. Just make sure you go to warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and order yourself a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. If you call yourself a sports fan, then you gotta have DirecTV. All right, sad news, definitely sad news, and I've been seeing this going around the Internet all week since it happened. The Ultimate Warrior, a lot of people's favorite or top three, top five wrestlers of all time, he passed away at the age of 54, and the crazy part about it, he was just on Monday Night Raw because he was inducted into the Wrestling Hall of Fame. What do you guys, man, what's your memory?
I guess in wrestling terms, that's like the biggest honor you can get. So at least he got to experience that. I mean, me and Dev were just talking before the show about, yo, how life is short and you just never know. And at least he got to experience that, man, because there's nothing worse than seeing someone, you know, get a bunch of love once they're gone. You know, sometimes you want to let people get love while they're here, man. In terms of my memory of the Ultimate Warrior, yo, like, you know, I'm not going to front. I was a huge wrestling fan as a kid and also during the Attitude Era. But the one thing I can say is, like, this dude's energy, whether you believe wrestling is real, because some people still think it's real, whether you believe it's real or not, yo, the energy this young man had, yo, is no faking that. Like, dude needed, like, 17 Red Bulls. Like, he was out of control. Yo, like, yo, what's wrong with him, yo? Like, yo, man. Yeah, man, so it's definitely sad, man, because, you know, as kids, we all love wrestling, and he's one of the guys that, you know, is recognizable.
Yeah.
I was definitely a Warrior fan, you know, along with a lot of other dudes that wrestled from that era. My thing is, he was only 54. Like, he wasn't that old. Like, cats still get wrestling contracts and try and jump off the top turnstile at 54 years old, so it's kind of, like, sad to me because, you know, they're going to have to kick Ric Flair out at the age of 80 because he's not going to stop.
Yo, Ric Flair's never leaving. He's never leaving.
Sting. Ric Flair got a whole nother generation of cats that love him that don't even remember.
Yo, Ric Flair's,
you know,
kids
horses
have wrestled and retired. And that's not even a joke, so that's
I
real.
I did not know that.
What I used to remember about him, besides the wrestling, man, is he had some of the most entertaining speeches and his little interviews with Mean Gene and those cats. Yo, he used to just be on some whole other stuff, talking about the peasants coming down from the universe and the warriors. And
that was whatever he was on, yo. He was on
crazy.
Hallucinogenic.
Exactly. But, no, it's a sad story, though, because, you know, they still haven't released if they don't, you know, maybe they just don't know yet, but they don't know or just haven't released the cause of death. They said he and his wife were walking to their car at a Arizona hotel, and he just collapsed on his way to
the
car, and then he was pronounced dead. Yeah, he was pronounced dead, you know, when they got to the hospital. Say there were no signs of foul play, so she didn't slip him a Mickey or nothing, but they just don't know, you know, what it was.
Yeah,
wrestling
and, you
world
know,
is saddened.
It's crazy because I saw, like, a couple comments from other wrestlers, and they said they could tell he wasn't himself. Like, you know, in terms of his energy, they said he was, like, seemed to be in pain the whole weekend, even as he was getting inducted.
Right.
And it's crazy because when I was reading those different stories from those several wrestlers, like Jake the Snake and Kevin Nash, and they were saying all these things, I couldn't help but think of that movie, The Wrestler, how them dudes love it so much,
yo,
but they be tearing their bodies up just like a football player does.
Yeah,
that
and
movie,
and
movies.
And we can't ignore, you know, the level and the amount of steroids that these dudes pump into their bodies.
Yeah, you know, we can't.
I'm not a steroid expert.
I was trying not to bring that up, but since you said you brought it up.
I don't know what the long-term effects are because I'm not a doctor, but it can't be good. And
that's what was so powerful about that movie because no one ever looked at that side. There's been documentaries. I shouldn't say no one's ever looked at that side, but that movie, opened that up to a lot of people. I remember people watching the movie and was like, wow, that was a powerful movie. You know?
Yeah.
When it was time for him to get in shape, he didn't go and run miles and like lift real hard. He just got a needle and hit the weights a little bit.
That's training, man.
Like that was getting
you get your
shape.
Needle.
That was
you get your needle. The Rocky music come on and you good.
That's a gym, yo. Pass me a needle.
Yeah, but so shout out and rest in peace to the Ultimate Warrior. One of our faves, one of everybody's faves, if they were a wrestling fan back in the 80s. DeSean Jackson, he was probably the biggest thing in sports news last week. Some new things have come out. I've been hearing this a lot on DC Sports Talk Radio. I don't know if it's as big of a deal as they're making it out to be, but I can see why it's a deal. DeSean Jackson missed the first voluntary workout, and, they thought it was compounded by the fact that he was posting photos from his vacation on, Instagram, Twitter, and all that kind of stuff. You guys got a problem with him missing his first workout?
This is for the G's, and this is for the hustlers. Yo, man, I understand that it's voluntary now, and people may get offended when I say this, like, because it is voluntary. But at the same time, when you know that the microscope is on you, you know what they're saying about you. And I guess there's two ways to look at it. You could just say, F it, I am who I am, and I'm just going to rebel, and they have to accept it. Or, you can try to, even if you don't believe in it, it's just, when I first heard that, I'm like, damn. Like, I thought that maybe after everything that happened to him, he would get his act together and, kind of give extra effort. Now, this is voluntary, so he didn't have to go. But at the same time, show your new team that they're not what they're saying about you.
Right.
You owe it to the fans or anybody else or the media.
No.
I think about this from the standpoint of being on a team with you. If I'm your teammate and I hear all these things about you and I don't really know and I'm getting ready to judge you, show your team that you're there for them. That's all I'm saying.
The funny thing about this whole story is the sycophants that, he's now acquiring sycophants. I don't even know the sycophants, but I'll go with the direction of Black Protectionists. Are saying, well, he negotiated within his contract where he could take this vacation. So the Washington Redskins were well aware that when he signed the contract, he wasn't going to show up to voluntary workouts because
he had
this vacation plan. I was gonna
address that because I was gonna say this is all speculation. So I'm gonna give him credit if the speculation is true. They're saying that it's possible that he may have, worked this out with the team beforehand. But like you said, people are coming out now. They took that little bit of information with somebody speculating that he might have, and now everybody's 100% sure that he cleared this with the team.
I'm going to Jimmy.
I still think it's important because
In 2014, with the way everyone has a news camera, their phone, and everyone has the ability to write an article with social media, you have to have an understanding of what your brand is and where your brand can go and how your actions and thoughts and words can affect your personal brand. Where he is right now in his life, he can't make a mistake. So for him to sign this contract and then go on vacation and then tweet about it, Instagram about it, he's either aware of what would happen or he just doesn't care. Because he has to know that all of this is going to come down to fight.
What I was saying is I think even if you told them, like, look, I scheduled something, prior to signing here, this and that, I still think, I think it's kind of important. New coaches, new team, new quarterback, just a whole new situation. I think it's important to be there. Now, I'm not going to knock the man if, he had the vacation plan, he can't get his money back, whatever. But like you said, you do have to be cognizant of your brand and what, you know, the opinions
well,
are
well,
about
the
you
thing,
if
though,
you care about that. Because don't appear to care about it and then you just say, you know, the hell.
Here's my thing, guys. For me, it's not even like so much about the brand, because your brand could be like, yo, I'm just a rebellious soul who balls out on Sunday. Like, I don't – for me, it wasn't even about the brand. It's about his teammates. Like, because, you know, you can have one brand for the media or for the public to consume, but for your teammates to know that, yo, you're willing to put the extra work in, go the extra mile to be a part of that team. I mean, if you look at Seattle, they're a tight-knit bunch. The champion Seattle Seahawks. And, I mean, so you got to show your team that, yo, you want to put this work. You're new. You're just coming in. You got – and that's the thing. Another thing I want to say real quick. People feel sorry for this show. And, like, listen, I'm not with the whole thing of trying to label him as a gangbanger, but I don't feel sorry for him either. He got, like, the most money in the offseason of any free agent. So what the hell am I going to feel sorry for him? He came up. At the end of the day, he got what he wanted. So with that being said, I'm like, yo, show your teammates that you're going to be there. You know what I mean? Like, when all this stuff happened, he was saying, I'm happy to be a Redskin. And then, look, man, why shoot the breeze about it when you can be about it, man? Just show up, do your thing. You know what
exactly.
I mean? Like, yo,
that's what I said. Unless you don't care, stop acting like you care, because then – you're sending mixed messages. Now, to be fair, D'Angelo Hall missed them as well, and he's also posting pictures from Disney World or whatever. And even in his case, it might be even worse because there's a new staff and D'Angelo Hall has taken this mantle as if he's the team leader. He probably should have been there as well. I mean, I understand these guys are human. I understand that you have families. I understand that in the quote-unquote off-season, you know, you want to do certain things, but, you know, it goes back to what you guys mentioned earlier. You have to be cognizant of the brand. You have to be cognizant of the messages that you send out there. You know, some of these things can be moved. And I don't want to, you know, just be moving people's vacation, counting their money or whatever. But,
yeah,
I don't know. It just sends a message that a lot of the stuff that these guys are saying is just lip service. And a lot of the fans eat it up. You know, it takes some photos in the club with the peace signs, and everybody think they are tight-knit like they're the Seattle Seahawks, and it's obviously not like that. We'll see, because there also reports came out that DeSean Jackson blew off his exit interview with Chip Kelly. And, you know, that was something else that was, you know, in the pot of why the contempt was building between those two. Remember, you know, exit interview, that's when you're still a part of the team. And he didn't know that he was going to end up getting released. And he blew off his exit interview. And I think he may have been the only player on the team to do so. So,
yo,
I don't know, man.
Y'all
like, we want to defend him because we have to defend him. All right, so let's move on. We have another announcement that has been made in the world of sports. Now we have the first openly gay men's college basketball athlete, and that athlete is Derek Gordon from the University of Massachusetts. He's a sophomore guard. He is a starter. 22-year-old shooting guard came out to his family and his coaches and his teammates at the beginning of April. He said he got mixed reviews. His teammates, interestingly enough, said that we got your back, you know, we're here for you, this and that. So to me, this kind of puts more pressure on the NFL and the NBA for their players to be more tolerant, because they're going to say, okay, these young kids can be more mature about it and be more accepting of it, you know. How are they the ones setting the example for you? So I think it actually puts more pressure on professional athletes and professional teams who have to kind of deal with, you know, someone coming out in the locker room. What do you guys think about this? Oh, and shout out to Sid Ziegler and OutSports because they were one of the first outlets that Derek Gordon reported to. So shout out to Sid.
Absolutely.
For giving another big story.
Shout out to Sid. Shout out to Lord
Jamar.
But go ahead, y'all.
God bless the gays, man. I mean, another come up in the midst of a triumphant rebuttal from all the social injustices that they've faced throughout the course of time. And It is what it is. I don't really have much other than that.
Be also trying to be tame. I respect that, man. Yo, yeah. With that being said, man, it's one of those things. The floodgates will now open. You're going to start seeing a lot more of this happen. You're going to start seeing people fake it, you know, just trying to get attention. At the end of the day, man, right now, yo, their movement is strong. Like, their movement is strong. And, I'm trying to watch my words. As you can see, I'm trying to watch my words. But they're moving strong, man. And I just want to see what the effects this going to have in the pros. Do you guys think more people will just start, you know, because now it's like you had the Jason Collins, you had the Michael Sam, now you have this. Like, it still hasn't been like that player who's, you know,
right,
a top guy.
People are waiting for that superstar, to come out.
I'm going
to
go
like
back.
Like Aaron Rodgers.
I'm going to go back to a point that I made, shout out to Rob Parker. He's the homie, friend of the show. He kind of swept under the rug, but I think was legitimate. Kerry Rhodes came off of a Pro Bowl, maybe all pro. I'm not sure. We'll have to check on that. But definitely a Pro Bowl performance in 2012 for the Cardinals. And then, you know, the allegations started flying. The pictures started getting passed around. The speculation, you know, came about. And my man ain't had a job since. Now,
yeah.
Rob said it was due to tread being worn off the tire, but I'm saying my man was just coming off of, like, 5 picks, 2 sacks, some forced fumbles, and a whole lot of tackles. And he was top 5 free safeties in the game. How did he all of a sudden fall off a cliff that
well, you know, another thing about
NFL?
NFL also mm-hmm. is on some stuff where they like to see how honest you are. Do you think if he would have admitted it, like, yo, this my dude, this my babe right here, and, you know, I've been in the closet. I've been in the closet.
This my babe?
My boo?
My boo.
Do you think if he would have admitted it, it would have made a difference? Or do you think that, you know, they just weren't ready at the time, like,
that's funny, Denver. That's exactly what I was thinking. You know.
The way
you're
handling
it, I think it has something to do with them.
The pink mafia is not going to support him.
Damn.
Because he didn't come out. But my bad. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that premise is along the lines of what I was thinking. Like, if they can't. You know, I don't know why. I can't really tell you why that is, because it really sounds like some elitist type stuff. But it's like, if you didn't tell us, then we don't really bang with you like that. I don't understand why.
Be also one of a point. If he would have came out and was like, "Yeah, this is my babe," and you know, the Pink Mafia would have got behind him and put that pressure, and you know what I'm saying? Like, so it would have been a little different. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't want to protect him. Now they're like, "Are you a coward?" You know what I mean?
You can't be a coward in the game.
Especially since he had the quote-unquote opportunity, you know, to come out because things
and
were
no,
out
and those
there.
Pictures, yo, I don't know how you justify, like, I don't even know how he lied his way. He really didn't lie his way out of it. No one believes. He needs more people. But it's like, those pictures were, like, damning. Like, yo, he had Boy in the pool sitting between his legs. He was like, yo, we just chilling. Like, come on, cuz. Like,
that's my publicist, yo.
That's my publicist. Yo. Kerry Rhodes, man, hold up. The crazy part about this is this story has nothing to do with Kerry Rhodes, yo, but Kerry Rhodes, man. You should be ashamed of yourself.
The way you carry yourself. That's the first time ever. We gave a JoJo to a dude that has nothing to do with the show. But he deserves it.
Well, I mean, his situation jumps him into that conversation. All right, last thing that happened while you guys were on the grind. Yeah, we know LeBron, he hit a milestone late last week. He became the youngest player, and I kind of hate these quote-unquote milestones. He became the youngest player to 23,000 points. Yeah, the reason I say I hate that kind of stuff is because, you know, youngest is relative, because some of these guys come into the league at 18. He came to the league at 18 right away and was the superstar on the team. Like, these guys aren't getting there with less games than, say, like a Wilt and a Michael Jordan and cats like that, but they're younger. So, you know, shout out to him for it. Another notch on his belt. But he decided to go post-game with the Pharrell Yogi Bear Park Ranger hat on. Did you guys see that?
With the Richard, the Richard head hat. The Richard
head hat. Did you dig that? First of all, like, my thoughts on the situation is that's like a one-time thing. I'm not saying Pharrell's the only person in the world with the Yogi the Bear Joe, but or the Smokey the Bear Joe, but like, he's made that statement. Like, since he did that, the whole internet has been going crazy. The whole country's been going crazy all about Pharrell. Like, how do you look coming out and, like, LeBron be on his followers?
Like, you have no pride?
I don't get it.
Like, you're a fighter?
Like, why would you wear that? Like, first of all, it's not cool.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say shout out to Pharrell, man, because, yo, Pharrell is one of them dudes that has, like, influence on pop culture and has, like, influenced hip-hop and pop culture several times, like, remaking himself and have people following him, whether it be, like, the whole skateboard thing, Skateboard P, or had these dudes singing when they really not supposed to. My man, he has a hit song singing, and he did it as a joke. Like, yo, but
It was a children's song.
Smokey the Bear hat. And the thing is, like, he's brought it out several times. That became, like, his thing. Like, and I wonder if he, like, looked at it and was like, yo, that's flower. He looked at it like, yo, I bet you won't wear that. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm going to make these dudes do this.
But it's one of those. We already know LeBron's personality, though. It's like, to be of the stature that he is, like, LeBron, you're one of the most famous people on this earth right now.
But he seems like
at every turn, at every moment, he needs everybody to be his friend. It's like he's validated by how many celebrity friends he has. I mean, when he introduced Pharrell at the All-Star game, at the little pregame concert, he was talking about how, he's a star and he's a close personal friend of mine. It's like, yo, you want to be close personal friends with everybody. Let people sweat you, LeBron. You know what I mean? Like,
I think it's a generation gap. I think it's two things at play here, Dev. Like, yo, not that I agree with it, but I just accept things for the way they are. These young dudes are just like, there is a generation gap. They're cut from a different cloth. They're not built for Cuban links. For one,
cut from the cloth.
And for two, he's not an alpha male. Every male is not an alpha male. So it's like, I'm not even going to hold it against him. Dude is just not an alpha male. Like, he's the best player on his team, but that's still D-Wade's team. That makes any sense.
I respect Jimmy's perspective, and I think that you accurately analyze what it is. But where we diverge, brother, is it's not acceptable, man. And stop allowing it.
I don't agree with it, but I don't have to agree with everything. Listen.
She's a 6'9", 278-pound, uber, super-duper athletic Richard Wright. Like, Pharrell is the type of dude where he can do certain things, and you're like, that's corny, but it's Pharrell. He's still going to get yams. And you respect Pharrell even for putting a condom head hat on because he's doing his own thing. He put a rapper hat on and he's okay because he's Pharrell and that's his lane. But no one sits down and says, let me do what Pharrell did.
I didn't expect to see anybody else famous wear that hat in public.
But that's why it's not. But the thing is, let me ask you a question. Were you shocked when you saw
LeBron? You can't
LeBron
even make jokes anymore.
I can't say I was shocked.
Honestly.
But that's my thing.
He runs around throwing up the Delta sign regardless of the fact of how
athletic he is, how great he is as a basketball player. He's still not an alpha male. Like, you know how they say, like, yo, you could be a corny dude with money, but you're still a corny dude. Like, yo, you are who you are. He's just not an alpha male. He's never shown us his entire life that he's an alpha male.
Shout out to my Delta sisters, man. Y'all were good peoples for letting LeBron pledge.
Yo, plus, you know, there's dudes that are alpha males that don't have that talent, but, yo, you know they're an alpha male on their team. They can't play a lick, but they're an alpha male.
Yo,
he's just not that
but
guy.
But you can't – what
Danny Granger.
Is the difference between being an
Shout
alpha
out to Charles
male being an alpha male and not being an alpha male, that doesn't mean just because you're not an alpha male that you got to get up under some other man's balls and carry him around. Like,
yo, man, he wasn't raised right, man. He can't even blame y'all. Blame his old head.
All right, Brian, man, for wearing that hat. Hey, Jim, tell everybody, man, who's having a birthday.
You already know. It's time to go over the birthdays. And for those who have been living under a rock and maybe have never heard this show or podcast, first off, kill yourself. But if you decide you don't want to, let's tell you who the birthdays are brought to you by. The birthdays are brought to you by Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. For the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. Treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area and beyond, visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700. That's 703-379-0700. And don't forget, tell them War Room Sports sent you. Get you that special rate and whatnot.
My birthday! Yay!
First person having a birthday is one Andre Ethier, who turns 32. The next birthday is one Ken Griffey, but that's senior, not junior. Ken Griffey Sr. turns 64. Neil Smith, the great nose tackle, he turns 48 years old. And last but not least, the legend, John Madden, who may not even be a legend for what he should be a legend for, but John Madden turns 78 years old. Happy birthday. We'd like to give a nice big warm salute to all these gentlemen on their birthdays.
He looks like Jerry Rice out there.
Said KC Chiefs. Neil Smith also was a Denver Bronco, so you know. Although he wasn't more known as a Chief, but shout out to them on their birthdays, though. And John Madden, man, you know, you out of control.
Yeah, you look at Matt Hasselbeck, and you don't think of him as a runner, but he's a very good runner. This is a bootleg. You see, he fakes the run to the left, and then he comes out here on a bootleg pass. He has the crosser who's covered, so he had to run. He had one guy on the outside, then he has Bobby Engram coming on the cross. He sees that he doesn't have either thing. He's not going to force it in there, so he turns and runs with it. Well, this has to be an idea that Mike Holmgren has now that he wants to bootleg, because on the first down play, he bootlegged, on the third down play, he bootlegged to the right, then he comes right back with another bootleg. See, both backs go to the right. You see Hasselbeck bootlegs out here to his left, so he bootlegged right and then came right back with another bootleg this time to the left.
Yo, shout out to John Madden and the bootleg.
What did he just say, yo?
All right, check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. You can click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Fair and Sports and More blog. Coming on the 15th, you can also click on that tab, the War Room Sports Podcast Network, so you can listen to some great sports talk, not just sports talk, some great talk radio in general. If you want to stick to the sports side, that's on you. But that will be up and running on the 15th, as well as a little link where you can go look at all the shows that are currently on the network. So don't forget about that when you're browsing the page next week. All right, then you can click the respective icons and like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, and to download our free War Room Sports mobile app where you can do all of this at one time, including watching our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk. If you don't want to do that, you can sign in through your Facebook and Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. To call, and speak with us directly, which you can do now because the Digital Exchange Technologies hotline is open. You can call 323-410-0012. Just press 1 when prompted if you're already listening from your phone. Just press 1 if you would like to talk. Alrighty then, we got some, you know, we got some hot topics going on, and the biggest story in the beginning of the week was the conclusion of the 2014 college basketball season. The Final Four, of course, was down in Dallas, Texas, and shout out to the homie KC Mack in the chat room because, you know, we did get with him while we were in the city. Nice to see you again, brother. I see you got them seats on Monday night as well. But shout out to UConn, the men and the women, because, again, the men and the women both, you know, swept the respective Final Fours.
Hey, Dev,
but I think
one thing, though, Dev, one thing that we didn't mention is these hot topics are brought to you by Audible.
Oh, no doubt.
If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you want, and try audiobooks, kick back and let someone else do the reading for you, all you have to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can listen to a latest bestseller, all kinds of books, a lot of sports books. If you like biographies, a lot of great biographies came out. James Gandolfini's biography just came out today. A lot of great stuff on Audible. But you can get a free book, any free book you want, audibletrial.com/warroomsports. Didn't want Audible to be mad at us, Dev, so go ahead.
Oh, no doubt. I was thinking they must have shot Jimmy that text while I was like, yo, what are you doing? what is your man doing right now? Can we get
Already.
Our props? But, yeah, so, like I said, shout out to UConn Huskies men's and women's basketball team. We're used to giving the women a shout out. I mean, we're even used to giving the men a shout out. They won, what, like 4 championships in the last 15 years? And for some reason, every time they win a championship, we got to have the conversation afterwards of, you know, where they rank as a program because they still seem to get overlooked, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking about great programs.
Definitely.
I remember the last time they won, we had that conversation with Calhoun being a great coach. You know, this time they did it with one of Calhoun's former players and assistants, Kevin Alley. But what did you guys, you know, think about the whole Final Four in general? Like, how did UConn pull this off? Because they weren't supposed to. Even once we got to the Final Four, they weren't supposed to win.
First of all, I would like to, you know, if you're a fan of the show, if you're a listener and you've been with us from our inception or even thereabouts in the middle of this journey, you know, you will have heard me discuss Kevin Alley, and I just want to take the time to send a salute his way. After you were done stealing money in the league, you found a way to create a productive life for yourself, and you look like you're turning into a fairly decent coach, as most benching bum point guards can do, and you did a wonderful job with that program this season because they're a perfect example of how you can take very good or great basketball and win via the cerebral context of the game as opposed to what we see in most of today's successful programs, which is just tremendous athleticism based on great recruiting. Like, I think he actually teaches the game. I think that these guys aren't necessarily the best athletes in the field, and they may not have even been the most athletic team on the court that night, but they are great basketball players at that level. And that's what I saw from UConn.
Yeah, because, you know, of course, but before, you know, I was just saying, of course, you know, they had to go up in the Final Four, they had to go up against Florida, you know, who were prohibitive favorites, and they got rid of them pretty easily and then, you know, moved on to Kentucky, who seemed to be peaking at the right time for a team that was predicted to be in this position when the season began. So what were you saying, Jimmy?
No, I just think watching it, I was actually very impressed with Kevin Alley, some of the adjustments he made, some of the how his team looked so prepared for each game. When you watch him play, the one thing I noticed about his team versus every other team in the tournament is like, yo, they look like they knew the exact plays the other team was going to run on both offense and defense, and they were just so thoroughly prepared. I saw teams throw a zone at him, and as soon as the zone went at him, they like switched their offense. Like, they were so prepared. I'm like, damn, this dude might be a good coach. You know, what they call him, Coach KO. Not Coach K, but Coach KO. But anyway, and when you get great guard play in the tournament, it can take you far, and they got great guard play.
And they were
just like, you know, they were coached up. They looked more prepared than almost every team they played. And I was very shocked at how they handled Florida. Like, I was like, damn, like, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day,
so
you kind of
expected them to manhandle the freshmen versus Florida?
Not that I expected them to manhandle the freshmen, but like I thought the freshmen were going to fall short to Florida. Actually, I thought maybe they would run out of gas. They had their run, but I didn't think UConn would be able to do to Florida what they did. I was very impressed by that. It looked like even with Florida, like it looked like, you know how when you play Tecmo Bowl back in the day and you pick the same play as somebody else, and your defense just rushes in. Yo, that's what it looked like when UConn were playing. Like, they knew every play everybody was going
to
run.
Exactly. That was a big part of what they did to Florida because, you know, Shabazz Napier, their star guard, didn't do much in the way of scoring in that semifinal game against Florida. But for, you know, basketball people who are really going to notice, like, he and Boatwright played great defense that night on Florida's guards. And basically controlled the game, like B. Austin said. Florida jumped out to a big lead, and it kind of looked like, okay, UConn's magic is finally gone. But another thing, and you got to give props to the players, definitely, but you got to give props to the coach for instilling this in his team. They did not panic. They didn't push the panic button at all. Before the first half, they had the lead, and then they just went out and, you know, did the Florida, what Florida did to them in the first 10 minutes of the game. And it was crazy. Like, Florida they tried to inch back a few times, but they just could not get back into the game. Now, being in the building was crazy because you realize that out of all the Final Four teams, UConn had the least amount of fans in the building. Florida was deep. Florida and Kentucky, they were just, you know, their fans were there in droves. They were crazy. Then, you know, Wisconsin had a good showing. But UConn really didn't have that many fans in the building relative to those other teams. So it's like once they got to the Final Four, they had to essentially play two games on the road because the crowd was raucous, you know, for those other teams. And, you know, having adversity against Florida earlier in the game, having a crowd against them, like I give those players a lot of credit, and I give Kevin Ollie a lot of credit for being able to stay calm and stay focused in that kind of environment, in that kind of atmosphere. So definitely shout out to
question for you
to Kate,
question,
Coach
question
K-O.
For you, Dev. Question for you, Dev and Jimmy. How much of a benefit was it that UConn had upperclassmen, juniors and seniors as opposed to being freshmen and sophomore heads? Do you think the experience played into their success?
I definitely think it plays a role. I kind of think, you know, at some point, though, as much as you hear it used, I think people start to use it in, you know, until it becomes a little bit cliche. I think they may overstate it a little bit. But, I mean, it definitely showed because, you know, their poise was there. It seemed like when we take it to the championship game against Kentucky, like I never really thought the Harrison twins were great ball handlers in the first place. But it seemed like the defensive pressure really shook them because their offense was starting way out near half court because these guys kept picking up their dribbles. And I'm not sure if that was a measure of them being young and inexperienced or just a little scared of the moment, you know, not used to the moment on this kind of a stage. But, yeah, I definitely think the experience played a part in it, but I don't think it plays as big of a part in it as a lot of people try to make it seem. You can always say, you know, teams have been in this situation before, but, you know, they really haven't. Like, UConn couldn't even go to the tournament last year. I know that the seniors, including Shabazz Napier, were on that team when they won it 4 years ago, but, you know, how much experience do you really get out of that being a freshman who's not really playing that much? So, I don't know. Definitely plays a role, though.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Why I had to give your man KO props.
Yeah, well,
and foul shooting.
As B. Austin call him Kevin Olai.
Foul.
But
foul shooting.
You brought up a point in terms of the program. Where is the program rank? And you know, that's a great question because I think they're going to have a boost after this win, because now they have a younger coach who more of these guys can relate to, and they can all wear their condom hats together. And recruiting will be a little bit easier now with this championship. And, you know, it was a great run. I don't know whether they'll be able to compete right again next year, but I think their program is on the right path. And like you said, they are already in terms of national championships. Because what's that? Because Calhoun has about three. That's one. That's like
three.
Four right there.
Now, Ali has one. They have four in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And Ray Allen was in the building. He's the most famous Husky of them all. And he don't even have one. But that was just a shot at Ray Allen.
Damn.
Got a question for you. Got a question for you guys. Regarding the whole Kevin Ollie thing. Because we hear this in a lot of other sports when new coaches take over. We definitely heard it with Kevin Ollie. There's a lot of people out there. And, you know, and I'm not a prisoner of the moment. I'm not ready to just call Kevin Ollie a great coach. But I can tell you that I've seen a lot from him, you know, this season, that would suggest that he's definitely on that road to being a great coach. Like, this early success, it could be a bit of a teaser because you start to expect this level and you start to expect to get back there. But, B. Austin, you think that it'll be more difficult when he has to recruit? Because the point that a lot of people keep making is, well, he did it with Calhoun's players, yada, yada, yada. You know, we hear that all the time. Do you think that matters in the larger scheme of things? We still had to coach these guys up.
No, I think that, you know, it pains me to give Kevin Ollie props, but I really think that you're seeing a very talented basketball mind, because when you think about the fact that he was able to stay in the league for 16 years and steal over $20 million, what he was able to do
keep bringing
is, is watch the game. Watch the game at the highest level, learn from some of the greatest coaches, and his basketball mind was developing. And the game now in 2014 is guard-centric. It's guard-concentrated. And he's able to coach up perimeter players to the highest level. I think that their recruiting is probably good because of the name, but I would think, despite the fact that they've won four chips in 15 years, when UConn shows up, they're not at the tippy-tippy top. They're not at the pinnacle of your heavy recruits. They don't recruit guys as heavy as they should, or they don't get the type of recruits that they should get for the success they had. So I don't even think that they had an overly stacked and talented team. I think they have a great basketball mind. I'm like you. I'm not willing to go out on a limb and say this guy is going to be, you know, all world as a coach. But the eyeball test, from what I saw, he's a good basketball mind. It's not just
recruiting. And I tell you this. I mean, a lot of coaches fool you with this, so you don't know if it's, you know, genuinely making a difference or not. But he coaches constantly. Like, dude is basically telling them, he's giving them instructions damn near for 40 straight minutes a game, standing up on the sideline screaming at these dudes. I don't know if that hurts or that helps, but he just won a national championship. So, I mean, we really
I think his recruiting will step up after this. I really do. I think that that team is going to be a problem. You know, again, when you talk to a lot of these young players, and I talked to a couple guys who were in the McDonald's game, a lot of these guys, like, you know, they admire the Coach K's or whatever, but just like we talked about in the pros, it's a paradigm shift with them as well. They want to play for younger coaches. So he's going to have an advantage. And now with winning the championship, so now he has something to stand on too. And, you know, UConn still has a name in terms of college basketball, but we'll see what happens.
Right. And to make a last point about, you know, people, you know, saying he won with Calhoun's players, you have to remember he was an assistant under Calhoun. So, you know, some of this
he
recruiting,
the
he had
something
to
anyway.
Do with recruiting the people that he had. Another factor that people leave out is the fact that they lost a scholarship or two because of the sanctions that came down on Calhoun. So that kind of, you know, put him in a little bit of a bind there. Another factor is that I believe they lost some players after that. I believe some, you know, a couple of people transferred after those sanctions came down. So he definitely wasn't stacked with a full deck, and he was still able to do this. So, you know, I'm curious to, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to the future to see if he can build on the success. I'm not expecting him to go out and win the championship every year or every other year. That's not going to be, to me, what proves whether or not he's a great coach. But I will be watching him because Kevin Ollie is, like, the biggest overachiever in basketball in the past two decades. So
life.
Before we wrap this up, because we're going to talk a little bit about Pacquiao and Bradley coming up, and we got our combat sport expert John Rhines waiting for us on the line. So I just want to wrap up the Final Four. Like I said, Dallas was, you know, they did it pretty well. I think the city might be cursed as far as big sporting events go, because during the game they had like a hailstorm and a lightning storm. It rained a lot of the weekend. And if you guys remember, like Jimmy and I, we had to cancel our All-Star trip that year because all the flights were canceled because of the ice storm that they had during the All-Star game. And then it snowed during the Super Bowl when they were supposed to have all those people sitting out on the lawn outside of the stadium to watch it. So I think Dallas may be a little cursed. I think maybe Jerry Jones and Mark Cuban may have sold their souls to somebody, and it's all coming back on them. But shout-out to Dallas because they definitely did it well. We also want to give a shout-out to the good folks at Coca-Cola because they looked out for you boys. They treated War Room Sports really nicely.
Shout
really
out.
Great.
That's Pepsi,
you know.
Unless you want to cut it. Yo.
they made everything easy for us, you know what I'm saying? Game tickets, hotel stays, everything. So shout-out to those
Yo,
people.
Shout-out to Coca-Cola. Yo, Dev, last thing I want to say before we go to this fight is with UConn winning those two games at Texas Stadium, that's like more playoff wins than the Cowboys have in their own stadium, right?
In their own building, no doubt.
All right.
That's true. Man, that's messed up. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a little while, but that's interesting. So let's go to Pacquiao versus Bradley 2. And with us on the line, like I said, we have our combat sports expert, John Rhines. John, what's going on, buddy? You're in the war room.
Hey, what's up, guys? Can you guys hear me? Like, do I sound clear?
Yeah,
you're
good.
We can hear you. We're good.
Okay.
We
I
want
to be like
Paul.
I want to be like Hollow them, you know, like Hollow and Lux, then
yeah.
The mic work.
I hear you.
Yeah. What's going on?
Well,
guys?
No doubt, man. We got Bradley and Pacquiao too. We just wanted to get you on for a couple of minutes to get your quick analysis and your prediction for this upcoming bout. We know the first one was met with a lot of controversy because a lot of experts and a lot of fans alike think that, frankly, Pacquiao was robbed in this decision. And real quick, tail of the tape, Bradley 31-0, 12 knockouts. Pacquiao 55-5-2 with 38 knockouts. They're both about 5'6". Pacquiao has a half an inch on them. They should be coming in around, well, last fight they were around 145, 146. Bradley with the longer reach, 69 inches versus 67 inches for Manny. He's orthodox, Manny southpaw, and, you know, their last wins for Bradley was against Juan Manuel Marquez, and unanimous decision, and Manny had a unanimous decision over Brandon Rio. So what do you see in this upcoming bout? First of all, were you one of the people who thought that the first fight might have been Pacquiao's and they ended up giving it to Bradley? What did you think about that one?
Yeah, at first I thought it was a highway robbery. I mean, I immediately went to the boards and was like, I can't believe it. It's a travesty. Until I did end up changing. I still think Pacquiao won, but I don't think it's as easy as everybody else thought. Because Jim Lampley, I don't know if you guys saw, he did like a little segment on this a week after that fight, and he was telling people to watch round five with the sound off. And I was like, that was Pacquiao's best round. Are you kidding me? You want to watch his best round? So he played that round with the sound off, and I was like, holy crap, like Bradley, like actually doing better than I thought. Like he was actually like, if you, like, turn off the HBO bias and, you know, and again, I'm stressing this was, like, to me, Pacquiao's best round. And I thought, like, man, that was very close, you know.
That's the thing that we get when we watch the broadcast. We definitely, I think, influences from the outside come in. Like, we listen to what people are saying. A lot of times people get fooled by punches that aren't really connecting because they're making noise and, you know, somebody might be moving backwards. So, you know, listening to it with the sound off is definitely a good idea, especially when there was controversy.
That black guy lost.
Have you guys did it? Have you guys watched that with the sound off?
I actually haven't, but now that you said it, I'm going to go back and do
that. I haven't either. Now I'm
going to
do that.
To,
Yeah, before this
fight, I was shocked. Like,
I can do that.
You can still give that round to Pacquiao, but if somebody said Bradley won, it's not that far-fetched anymore. I was like, wow, maybe I need to sit my butt down and do a reassessment. So I watched the whole thing without it. I still had Pac-Man winning a close fight, but, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, like, what technically happens. What matters is what the normal human being sees, and the normal human beings there, the people that was on front row, press front row, they saw the same thing the judges did, and most of them had Pacquiao winning. So they weren't influenced by the announcers or anybody. So if you put that same scenario together again, Pac-Man is going to win, and not only that, Tim Bradley gives 110% every fight. If he gave 110% that fight, what more can he give?
Right. True.
What are the different, like, what can he improve on if he always trains to his umpteenth degree and fight at his umpteenth degree?
Brother, I want to know who got paid. Who got paid?
This might got paid.
No, but the real question is with the upcoming fight. Like you said, if Bradley gives 110% every fight and we still think he lost, like, what more can he do? But is Pacquiao still the same fighter? You know, because he's gone on a string of, you know, misfortune ever since that happened. So do you believe that he's still the same fighter? I mean, I heard people close to him say that this might, and they're not getting it from him. They're speculating that this could be his last fight, because they just have been around fighters and they know when it's the end of the line. Like, they're saying he's too compassionate with his opponents. Like, he doesn't have that hate in his heart that you have to build up before a fight. They just think he's not training as hard. He has so much other things to do in his life. Do you think he's the same fighter?
I think he's the same fighter or better. And I'll tell you why. The only thing that's bad that's happened to him is he ran head first into a check hook. You don't run head first into a check hook and get knocked out cold unless you're trying to kill somebody. So he hasn't lost the competitive edge. And the fight where he got knocked out cold was the only time in four matches he was clearly outboxing the other guy. Now, I wanted Pacquiao to lose, so I'm not trying to make him look good or whatever. I wanted Juan Manuel Marquez to finally get one, so I was rooting for Juan. But Juan was losing that fight boxing.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we get you on there, because you keep it real, no matter who you're rooting for.
Yeah. Yeah. So you think, okay, so he got caught on that one, but he was winning a boxing match. And then he fought Brandon Rios, and he just won every round. So what does that knockout do? The knockout means if you got power, you can knock him out. Tim Bradley don't have power because he does not punch correctly. He punches, he throws his punches like Shaq shoots the free throws. That's why he doesn't knock people out.
And Tim Bradley has shown in a lot of fights that he can be hit as well.
Yeah.
So you don't want to get hit too many times by a motivated Pacquiao, because you might get knocked out. So.
Exactly. Another intangible I'm going to watch tonight is the feet thing. I wasn't paying attention, but, you know, Bradley came out that fight in the wheelchair, and they were showing replays where, you know, their feet was clashing, and Manny was stepping on his foot a lot by accident, of course. So, I mean, if that really hindered him where he was in the wheelchair, you know, and if that doesn't happen this fight, maybe that could be an advantage for Bradley, you know.
Okay. Well, give us your official prediction. You know, who's going to win? How do you think it's going to end?
I think it's going to look just like the first fight, punches and bunches. I think Tim Bradley may come on a little hungrier this time, and due to the face-off, him saying that he's going to have to die to lose and everything, I think he's going to be a little bit more reckless in the first six rounds before reality set in. He may get popped a little bit more. So I got a wider margin for Pac-Man.
Okay. All right. So – by the decision, though.
Yeah, by decision. I don't think he's going to knock out Bradley.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be a decision, and the margin will be wide enough. Well, we always say that in boxing.
He's going to get robbed. We
think the margin is wide enough that somebody can't get cheated, but we've seen so many things in boxing.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I'm going to do it again tonight. I wish you guys would, man. I'd love to see your opinion on Facebook after you go watch that with the sound off, especially the couple of key round five, and I think
round eight.
For that.
Yeah, I might do that for the upcoming fight. I'm going to start watching all the fights with the sound off.
All right.
Jimmy's going to watch it live with no sound. He's going to miss out on the whole broadcast. right, well, John, man, thank you. We appreciate you coming on, especially talking about this on short notice. We'll look forward to, you know, some of the stuff that you gave us in your analysis. We'll look forward during the fight. We're definitely going to watch that last fight without the sound, or at least some of the rounds, before this fight on Saturday. So we'll talk to you after the fight, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you,
okay,
John.
Okay, no problem, guys.
All right, take it easy, homie.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's John Rhines, everybody. That's one of the War Room Sports correspondents for Combat Sports. He just doesn't get down with the boxing.
Gave
he'll tell you about MMA. And he can hit you off with some battle rap knowledge. I mean, that's a combat sport these days. If you ask your man, it can be stealing people all the time. But
What's his name?
The boy that be punching people
Math,
all the time?
My man, Math. How shot
the
Math.
Math Hopper.
Shout out to Math.
Make it a combat. It's
make,
a combat sport, man.
You make battle rap a combat sport.
Real quick,
all
gentlemen,
so
let me get your prediction before we move on. What's your prediction for the fight,
Dad? That's what I was... I think Pacquiao will take it. Unlike John, though, I don't necessarily think that Manny Pacquiao is the same fighter. I had to take into account some of the stuff, and I forgot exactly who said it. It was somebody close to him, though, who was talking about just how they think he looks. When you're a boxer like that and you start to have too many things pulling you in different directions, your performances start to be affected by it. I mean, ask Mike Tyson. You know what I'm saying?
Yo,
he was the most dominant thing that
I'm
going to
tell both of you gentlemen right now. You want to know, when a little bit of, like, you know, the whole Manny Pacquiao mystique died? I'm going to tell y'all when.
He doing too much, though.
Yeah!
He says, sometimes when we touch.
Yo.
Yo,
you're not going to be a
he gets nominated for a JoJo Award, too.
Yo, you know what will be downright hilarious and will be the greatest thing ever, and probably only an asshole, probably only a person like Floyd would do it, is if, yo, you came out to that song. Like, you made that your entry music.
Yo, your man Adrian Broner might do it, but he going to mess
Broner
it up.
Might do it
stretch.
Too.
He might
do it
up
too.
Like stretch them.
I believe I'm in agreement with y'all. I definitely think that Manny's not the same fighter. I don't necessarily know that it's athleticism or diminishing of physical skill. It's mental. Like, I don't know. Yeah, dude is trying to run for the president of the Philippines. He's doing Hennessy commercials. He's paying Bob Arum's salary. He's recording albums. Yo, he got a lot going on.
Sometimes,
you know, but he's not being pulled in the same direction. I mean, he's not hitting his baby mama, and he's not taking people in the desert. You know, there are certain things that aren't on his mind, you know, so he's in a positive place as far as that's concerned. He's not trying to kill people for stealing jewelry. So who's going to win the fight?
I got Pacquiao winning the fight.
I got Pacquiao in the decision. I can't see him knocking him out. I got a decision.
Yeah, Pacquiao in the decision. I don't think Tim Bradley's that good.
I know, he's definitely a quality fighter. He's a quality fighter. And, like, one thing I can say about him, like John said, he always, like, gives his all. I don't think he's an elite fighter like
he's
Pacquiao.
He's an effort guy.
No.
Yeah, I was about to say he's an
effort
guy.
Yeah, but I'm saying you got
to
respect
that,
though.
That
he's a blue-collar guy, man.
He's an effort guy.
Plus, Bob Arum going to try to get a third one out of it anyway, so you know he got to win this one for it to be in part three.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yo, man, he got robbed, yo. Tim Bradley didn't believe Tim Bradley won that.
I ain't trying to go down this road.
Yeah, I'm leaving that alone.
I know everybody else is over it, but, you know, I still wouldn't mind seeing that fight one day, but not 10 years from now. All right, so everybody has Pac winning in the decision. Nobody thinks he's going to knock the dude out, which is, you know, that makes sense to me. Real quick, man, Ryan Braun, we talked about him last week and the ovation he got. In the home opener in Milwaukee, I mean, he got a different type of ovation in Philly, and you know the type of ovation the visitors getting Philly. But this dude went out and hit three home runs on the Phillies and shut everybody up.
He's still hitting.
Now, I immediately saw the internet turn on his head and start saying that Ryan Braun is still on the juice. Is he just that good, that lucky, or is Ryan Braun still on that stuff? Come on, man. Y'all got any, you got any opinions on this, Jim?
Yo, my
thing is us?
Yo, I just think that
we stink.
That's the sad part about the whole steroid era. It's about anybody who's ever been, like, you know, caught using is kind of ruins it. No matter what you do now, that's always going to be the cloud over your head, man. It's too dark to see tomorrow, too, man. Like, that cloud going to be there. So it doesn't matter what he does from this point on, yo. That's the first thing. It's funny
because
I was sitting there. I was sitting there.
He might just be that great.
Yeah, he might be. But the thing is, too late now. Like, yo, A-Rod destroyed his whole legacy, yo. A-Rod was arguably on his way to being one of the top five players ever in the history of the sport. And, yo, not even mentioned at all no more. Like, you ruined all that. That's the sad part about
Philly
it.
Philly fans are chanting steroids every time the dude went to the plate, and he showed them. Dude drove in seven runs. I just wanted to mention that real quick because we did talk about his ovation last week. But you know, he's starting off pretty good, and like be by us. Why does it have to be against us? Anyway,
shout out to Ryan Braun.
Yeah, all right, we know the 2014 Masters underway. It doesn't seem like the interest is there, at least from, you know, most of our audience, because you know who is not playing, Tiger Woods. But it's going. Haas is at the top of the leaderboard right now. But it's early, first day, so we'll revisit this a little later on. But it's one of the – even though we don't – really follow golf all of that tough, and Jimmy doesn't even acknowledge it as a sport, the Masters is still one of those events that you just can't ignore. So we gave it its 30 seconds, and we will move on.
Who can't ignore it?
last hot topic, let's go back down to Dallas, and we're going to talk about Jerry Jones. Now, we know we got a Cowboy fan in the chat room right now, so we'll get his opinion on all this as well. Jerry Jones was doing a press conference because Jerry World, that beautiful stadium of his, is going to host the 50th annual Academy of Country Awards next year. So talking about the show, I guess trying to do a press conference, kind of hyping up his venue and hyping up the show, Jerry Jones says this, and I quote, "As you know, the Cowboys have not gone to the playoffs in several years. We have not gone, yet we're the most popular TV show there is on television. We lead all teams in TV ratings. We lead 24 of the last top 25 shows were NFL games, and anytime your Cowboys play, they're up there at the top and leading. Now, what causes that? What causes that is creating some aura, creating some excitement. We want to use that as best as we can to make this award show the greatest ever." Now, I've asked Cowboys fans this, and a lot of them didn't say much. But you guys put yourselves in the shoes of a Cowboys fan. Would you be good with your team owner basically bragging about what's continually making him filthy rich while giving you as a fan an inferior product on the field every season? Do you guys have any problems with Jerry Jones' comments?
I have a problem with Jerry Jones, and I hate his team because I feel Jerry Jones is disrespectful to the sport. He's disrespectful to competitive greatness. He thrives on mediocrity, sensationalism, and making a big whoop-de-damn difference that doesn't result. And they've been 8-8 for the last three seasons. Three straight 8-8. Who's cool with that?
But they lead the TV ratings, though.
Yo, I'm putting that on. B. Austin, good brother, that should be on your tombstone the day you leave us, good brother, as a competitive greatness. That's his favorite thing.
Every topic.
You know, somehow he finds a way, yo. He finds a way. But Jerry Jones is hilarious, man. I salute him for this, man, because he finds a way to stay relevant, keep his team out there, and he's built the biggest fan base possibly in sports. Yo, Cowboys fans are like, yo, they're like a gang, and they're all over the world. So I salute him for his business acumen. In terms of his team, they stink, but it doesn't even matter that they stink because they're the Cowboys, and that's kind of what he built. So you got to salute him for that. I don't like the Cowboys at all. I hope they lose every game for the rest of my life. But you can't help but salute Jerry Jones from a business standpoint, yo.
Great cash, homie.
And that's what it's about.
The fact that you said the word relevant, that brings me to a debate, discussion, argument, or whatever the hell I was having on our Facebook page today. A Cowboy fan actually came on and was saying, until the Cowboys are irrelevant, Jerry Jones is not going to change. And I agree with him 100%. Of course, an Eagles fan
he
comes
finds
on.
A way to stay relevant without winning, though.
Exactly.
So he'll never
Eagles
be irrelevant.
An Eagles fan comes on with the same opinion, but basically goes around that opinion and just focuses in on the word irrelevant. And he's saying, you know, did a Cowboy fan just say that, you know, the Cowboys are relevant? Like, that's just rival team hatred to me. Because if
but
you
know,
don't
some people,
understand
some people can't
you don't
see that
Yeah, if you don't understand and see how the Cowboys are extremely relevant within today's NFL, then you're really just not watching. Relevance
Listen,
isn't only determined by wins and losses. This is
not at all.
This is professional sports, first of all. So
not at all.
If their valuation, which is $2.3 billion, you know, nobody else in the league has even hit $2 billion in their valuation yet, you know, if that – doesn't make you relevant in professional sports, then it's like, why do the games
Yo,
cost
they
money?
Are
why
fairly,
players
they,
get
they
paid?
Are completely relevant. They will lead off. They will lead off any show after the game, and they can have a losing record. It's like the Lakers. The Lakers are relevant now, and they stink. They're putrid,
exactly.
But they're
yeah.
relevant.
That's what I'm saying. People
like,
think relevance is just wins and losses, and that's just a component of it. That's just a component.
You're absolutely right.
I think they are losing some of their luster because Jerry has been consistently putting out an inferior product. I'll say this. For them to fall out of relevance would take it would take, man, it might take 15, 20 years of losing. I would say at least 10. Of losing for them to not
How would
be
they
relevant?
Be losing any luster if they're leading the TV ratings and the biggest, you know, TV market? I mean, in the NFL, like he said, last 24 of the last 25 highest rated shows were NFL games. If they're the leader in that category, how can you be losing any luster? You know why they're relevant? Because even people who hate the Dallas Cowboys make a big deal out of them even when they don't think they're doing it. The fact that this guy that I argue with all day argued on the page about the Cowboys who he deems as irrelevant shows you that they're relevant. This same guy, when we had conversations about Tony Romo, he was on the page all day dissing Tony Romo. When the Cowboys come up, people who hate
them
talk.
Before you even said that, I didn't even see the conversation. Before you said that, I knew it had to be either an Eagles or Redskins fan because the NFC East is like, yo, their rivalries is a little bit different. Like, I hate the Raiders, right? I hate the Raiders, but and I hate the Chiefs, too, not as much as the Raiders. But, yo, the NFC East is just on another level when it comes to hating other teams. Like, all objectivity is thrown out
it's
the window.
Gangbang.
Yo, it is definitely gangbanging, yo. It's like, yo, when Deshaun signed with the Redskins, I saw people, like, threaten his life, his family. Like, the NFC East is literally, like, gang. It's like gangs in the NFC East. So,
but the thing
I don't even
is, Jim,
take people serious because they lose all objectivity. They don't even realize they're crazy.
But the people who always want to deem the Cowboys irrelevant in the larger scheme of things are the ones who's keeping them alive. This is an example that I always give people. Now, you know, born and raised in Philadelphia, lived in D.C. for the past 15 to 18 years, and, you know, as much as we travel around the games, we've been in Dallas, you know, leading up to an Eagles game or a game against Washington. You know what both of these cities, Philadelphia and Washington, do, and I don't know too much if they do it in New York, but I believe they do as well. When they're about to play the Dallas Cowboys, they have what they call, quote-unquote, Dallas week. When I was in Dallas,
damn sure do.
They didn't have Redskins week and Eagles week or Philly week and Washington week. I mean, it's a game against your rival, so, you know, it gets talked about. But as much as we say that they're irrelevant, everybody gets excited for, quote-unquote, Dallas week.
Let's stop giving them all of this attention
if you don't want them to be relevant. Get off me.
Here's something else. Here's something else that'll show you their relevance, right? Who is the Eagles' biggest rival? Dallas, right?
It's Dallas. And Dallas,
who's the Redskins' biggest rival?
Acknowledge the Eagles as their biggest rival.
Who's the Redskins' biggest rival?
Dallas.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, they're probably the Giants. Everybody in the division, they're their biggest rival. But that's what I'm saying. Like,
exactly.
The Austin. And the thing is, they don't even have to win. Salute Jerry, man. Jerry did this, man.
The Washington team, since I've been here, has had several coaches come in and at their opening press conference talked about beating Dallas for the fans. So it's all good and well. We all of us fans of the NFC East, we hate Dallas. I mean, I hate all of y'all. But let's stop trying to, you know, throw this facade on like they're not relevant if you're the ones that's keeping them afloat. Like, Jimmy, we're talking about the TV ratings. I guarantee you a big chunk of that TV ratings are from people who can't stand the Cowboys because they're going to watch the Cowboys because they're going to sit there for 60 minutes a weekend hoping that the Cowboys lose.
Yep.
And people don't do that. They're not going watching every team in the league even if they don't want
to win. I was in Belize, and I saw a dude with a Cowboys hat. I've been in different countries in different – there's Cowboys fans all across this world, yo. Salute Jerry B.
I've actually been at sporting events outside of the game of football where fans of these NFC East teams just break into a Dallas sucks chant.
y'all giving them
power. Like Nas said, man, I gave you power. So don't sit there and talk about
them
like
everything that y'all saying is definitely true in the greatest way. To actually diss someone is to ignore them and pretend that they don't exist. They're dead to you. And people definitely do not do that with Dallas. Because you're right. The Dallas Cowboys do not consider the Philadelphia Eagles their biggest rival. Like, they don't. And I've explained that to Eagles fans time and time again. There seems like there's more Cowboys fans here in the D.C. area than Washington professional football team fans.
But B. Austin, the fact still remains that even though traditionally the Washington team is the Cowboys' biggest rival, they still don't sweat them the way Washington fans sweat the Cowboys when it's time for them to get it in. I have been in that city, you know, listening to this, and we got in the kill. He's down there, you know, 24/7. And, you know, we've gotten this report from him. Like, it doesn't seem like it goes both ways. These people, of course, they're rivalries. Of course, they want to beat these teams, but they don't make as big of a deal of the Eagles, Giants, and the team in Washington as those teams make about them. But we all want to get upset and deem them irrelevant. That's the part that I don't understand about this. You sit here and argue with me about
guys
for 5 hours,
so
but then
your
main point is they're not relevant.
We the guys you love to hate.
All right.
Yeah, man.
But with all of that said, and us moving on, Jerry Jones is basically saying that I'm all about that bread. Just like I tell the fans in Washington sometimes, like,
where's your
bread? The only way you guys are going to change things is to stop supporting at the level that you support. Like, because if you look at the Cowboys and Washington, like, they have some of the highest ticket prices in the league, some of the highest parking rates in the league, and their owners continuously put out garbage, but they continuously are among the top franchises in revenue. So the only way you're going to even start to get a little bit of change in Cowboy land is, you know, to ease back your support a little bit, but that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So Jerry Jones can go out and basically slap you in your mouth and say things like this and still put out a trash product every Sunday, and everybody's going to keep coming back. So shout out to him because it's working for him. Straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie.
Where's your bread?
Where's your bread?
So now, you know, since the Cowboys are irrelevant,
man, Stevie
they definitely
come back,
stink.
Man.
let's move on, man. Let's talk some NBA because we are coming down to the final stretch. Things are heating up.
Yo, how can people get in touch with us, though? Real quick.
Well, all they got to do is basically check out our website because everything's there, worldroomsports.com. And if you want to call in and speak to us about any of today's topics, including the irrelevance of the Dallas Cowboys, dial Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Now, I'm going to tell you how me and B. Austin going to get labeled Cowboys lovers because, you know, we keep it objective and we keep it real.
Listen, man, I'm telling you, I don't even – when it comes to certain, like, rivalries, like, I don't even expect adjectives. I just sit back and laugh, yo, and that's one of them. Yo, because I've seen people from, like, Eagles fans go off on, like, Cowboys fans and, like, will ignore anything that, like, goes against their argument. Just ignore it. That's how they do. Anyway.
I'm telling you, Jimmy, for 5 hours, this dude was agreeing
with his zombies.
He just went into the word – he just focused in on the word irrelevant. He agreed with it.
That's the whole premise.
The whole premise was that Jerry Jones is not going to change and Dallas is not going to be good until he gets hit financially. And we all agreed on that,
but he doesn't know that he's agreeing
because
he was here's the thing, man.
I know you hear Jimmy and I quoting Stevie J because it's funny, but for real, like, real talk in his own way, Jerry Jones is saying, like, where's your breath?
Where's your bread?
Like, you can say whatever you want to him, and he can say, where's your bread? And when you look at the balance statements and the profit and loss, he's winning. He is winning.
Yo, but here's the thing, right? Before we even jump into basketball, last thing I want to say is that remember where the word fans come from. You know, remember where that word is derived
fanatic.
From. And that's all that boils down to, y'all. Speaking of fanatics, by the way.
Fellas, if you didn't have to win to make the most money, like, would winning be all that important to you?
Y'all ain't even mad at that.
If you ain't have to win,
I'm supposed to be mad at that?
That's what I tell other podcasts. They be like, yo, we have such and such listens. I say, well, where's your bread? Anyway, with that being said, right, let's talk about the NBA rap. Yeah, that's right. I'm talking ish. Yo, speaking of Fanatics, right, for the best of your favorite team's merchandise and apparel, shop Fanatics. Shopping Fanatics is easy. Go to our website, warroomsports.com. Click on the Fanatics logo on our main page or go right to our sponsors page, and you can get the latest in NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, NCAA, boxing, MMA, anything. You name that's a sport, you can get the gear. Fanatics. Don't forget to shop Fanatics right at warroomsports.com. Gentlemen,
shout out to them, yo.
Basketball.
Fanatics actually had a presence down there in Dallas, too, as well, Jim. I couldn't tell because it was like they had a lot of signs in the parking lot, so I couldn't tell if it was for the Final Four, if it was for the Texas Rangers, because, you know, those parking lots kind of
trying to get that bread.
We're right next
trying to
each
get that
other.
Bread.
So shout out to Fanatics.
Thanks for the support. You already know. Let's talk some basketball, gentlemen.
All right, let's talk some b-ball. What my man
let's
Curtis
talk about
man.
The dish. The first thing I want to talk about, after Curtis Blow blesses us with his bars, is the NBA Player of the Week. Al Jefferson and Dirk Nowitzki. Dirk winning Player of the Week.
Dirk is quietly. He is quietly having a monster season. Kind of, he's getting ball.
Dirk plays with this air of calm confidence that I kind of I love to watch. He seems like he's just
you
above it all
stop.
At this point. Like, I'm
he
a legend
with,
right now.
He plays with you can't guard him.
Yeah,
yo,
even though I run like somebody hit me in my shins with a baseball bat, you still can't.
Yo, that whole demeanor and disposition came after he married a Nubian queen, by the way, and that's real.
Yeah. He like, man, if I can bless that, then what y'all gonna
his
say?
Whole attitude
I'm supposed to be mad at that.
Yo, he got that African wedding. His whole attitude changed. I'm telling y'all, but Dev, what are the stats of Al Jefferson and Dirk Nowitzki?
Al Jefferson and the Bobcats during the, you know, a little late season push where playoff positioning is still at play. The Bobcats went 4-0 They clinched the playoff berth in the process. Al Jefferson averaged 24.3 points. He shot 48% from the field, 13 rebounds, and 1.2 blocks for the week. Dirk and the Mavs went 3-1. He averaged 25.3, 8 rebounds, and for the week he connected on 13 of 23 three-point attempts. So he shot 56%, almost 57% from behind the arc. So he's starting to light it up at the right time as well. So shout out to Al Jefferson, who's gotten this a few times this season.
We all thought
his move to the Bobcats was a straight up, in the words of Rob Parker, money grab. But he's gone over there and led this team to the playoffs. You're in the East. In the East. So, you know.
Ain't hard to be in.
I didn't know Al could play D like that. Like, Al's been a defensive stalwart for somebody that can't jump over a quarter. Like, he's playing
motivated.
D. We all know about the footwork. Like, he's a throwback when it comes to moves and footwork. But he does something on the defensive end a little bit too, and he always gets overlooked when we have these who's the top five or who's your top three center conversation. Yo, shout out to Al, man.
Yo, another thing, speaking of that shout out right there, I think about Dirk and his place in history. He'll be another one of those guys who are forgotten. Only reason that he may not be is because, you know, he's not an American-born player. So his name will always come up when you talk about foreign players. But what he's been able to accomplish, you know, over you know. Do you remember that argument that was on our page in reference to, like, Shaq and Dirk and over this
I agree with the people who are saying I think Dirk has already been forgotten a little bit.
Yeah, Dirk, you know, people were slandering Dirk like he just doesn't exist. And people know I was very, like, critical of Dirk Nowitzki because I felt in the beginning of his career, yo, during the clutch, he used to play hot potato. But he got him a newbie and sister,
yo,
and he
Jimmy,
went off.
The beginning of his career, he was a 7-foot three-point shooter and didn't do anything else.
You know what I'm saying? Nothing. But anyway, he's going to be one of these guys in the grand scheme of things that who, you know, people don't forget just how good he is or was or whatever. But anyway, let's move on because he's still putting in work. The 2014 Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame class. Dev, do you have the name of the class?
Yes, sir. The women's committee voted in Immaculata University. That's the women's team led by Hall of Famer Kathy Rush. 72-74 team. They actually went 60-2 in three seasons, so they put the whole damn team in the Hall of Fame. Alonzo Mourning, Zoe Gitson, seven-time NBA All-Star, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, Coach Nolan Richardson, who was the 94 College Basketball Coach of the Year, led the Razorbacks to the 94 National Championship, three Final Four appearances. Mitch Richmond, six-time NBA All-Star, gets into the Hall. A lot of people were kind of – there was a debate going on about Mitch Richmond. And, you know, I'll ask you guys after the list is done if anybody's in there you think shouldn't be. Coach Gary Williams, who led the University of Maryland to a national championship. Bob Leonard, Bob Slick Leonard, winning his coach in ABA history. He's in. David Stern, the commissioner, we talked about his induction, you know, a few times because people were thinking he was getting in too early. And I really don't think it matters, the commissioner. Nat Nathaniel
Turner.
Nat Sweetwater Clifton. He was the first African American to sign an NBA contract. So he's of those three who kind of signed around the same time. He's the last one to get in with Chuck Cooper and Earl Lloyd. That's funny because I actually thought Nat Sweetwater Clifton was already in. Like, even if he was a bum. Like his,
yo, I just assumed he was in too. That's what's crazy.
Yeah,
I put the same thing when I saw his name.
You're the first African-American to sign a contract. Just put him in because
of that. I assumed
he was
in already.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I did too.
Major.
We got Sarunas Marcellonis. Sarunas Marcellonis is now in the Hall of Fame. From the Veterans Committee, you got Guy Rogers, who I thought was already a Hall of Famer. And, that's the list. Anybody questionable to you guys?
The whole damn list. This is like the Hall of Mediocre.
No, Mitch Richmond deserves it. Mitch can go in.
Even Mitch is borderline because my whole thing is, you know, it's sort of like I think that some of these sports be like, yeah, we have to have somebody go in. You know, some years you need to just chill. Nobody can get in. And the thing about it is these are all talented players, great players even. But to me, the Hall of Fame has to be if the Hall of Fame is going to be like the way it is now, I kind of agree with Bill Simmons' assessment. You need to have levels. Levels to this ish. You need to maybe have like a different level where we can put like, you know, the Magic, Michaels, Larrys, and Doctors. Like, because, yo, you're not going to tell me that in terms of contributions to the game that Alonzo Mourning made the same as Michael Jordan, or that Mitch Richmond, should be sitting next to Magic Johnson. Like, you can't do
that. If Mitch Richmond's bust is next to Dr. J's in the Hall, like, I'm thinking they disrespecting Doc a little bit.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, you can't do that.
It needs to be another rumor.
The one I'm a Mitch fan, one of my favorite two guards.
No disrespect. I think Mitch was nice. In the 90s,
I think he was one of the best two guards in the 90s.
That ain't hard to be in here, but still.
But at the same time, like, I am borderline on Mitch, so maybe even though he's already gotten in to the norm, you know, to theirs, we might have to do a HOF always on Mitch Richmond, because I got some mixed feelings about it, because Mitch was, you know, for a minute, he was one of my favorite two guards. Ain't hard to be.
But that's what
I'm
saying.
And with their highlights.
It's no disrespect to the brother. He's nasty. He had major games.
But
you're not
going to
put him in the same room. You're not going to put him in the same room as the Iceman or Dr. J or Michael Jordan. Like, he don't belong there.
Jim, you're right. He's a six-time All-Star. Like, is that enough? Like, when you played how many years, is that enough?
It's going to be enough for Reggie, the Ferengi.
Because this is, like you said, this is supposed to be the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Good, the Hall of Very Good. Like, this is the Hall of Fame, and they're also highlighting that he won a championship in 2002 with the Lakers. But, come on, how much did Mitch really have to do with that?
Yeah, we got a tweet, by the way, in reference to our basketball talk. At KCMax38 says, Dirk might be the most disrespected All-Star of all time. He's top 10 in scoring and maybe end up top 5 when he's through. So, yeah, he kind of agrees with us on that. No, he's talking about Dirk. Dirk will get in.
Mitch,
I put Dirk in before everybody you just named on that list.
You're right about
Mitch
that.
Mitch Richmond played.
While we dissing Mitch, yo, Sarunas Marcellonis only put up like 12 points a game. Like, dude.
All right, wait. Hold up. Before we leave Mitch, think about this. And this is a question that I might start throwing out there with my criteria. Mitch Richmond played, and All-Star games aren't even, you know, the end-all, be-all to me, and I know it's not to you guys, but the fact is when you're not a starter in the All-Star game, I think it's actually more of a prestigious thing because the fans aren't voting you in. You know, the coaches are saying, like, this is a guy we have trouble with every night. So out of 14 seasons, he made 6 All-Star teams. So you think somebody who made the All-Star game less than half of their career deserves to be in the Hall of Fame?
That was my whole beef with Reggie Miller going in. Like,
he did
average
21 a game.
Yeah, I have a problem with almost everybody on that list. Like, yo, real talk, like, no disrespect to Gary Williams, man, great coach. But, yo, you're not going to put him, like, next to Red Auerbach. I mean, his career coaching record is, like, 65%, 452 and whatnot. You know, 452 and 242, I'm looking at it in Maryland.
Well, not even Red. You're talking about, like, John Wooden, and you go to the college coaches. Like,
John Wooden, Coach K, like,
I think
Bobby
at this point,
Knight,
once you win a chip, they, like, you, if you win a chip and you stayed at a program for a long time, I think they're putting you in there.
What y'all trying to do is disrespect me to my face and tell me Kevin Ollie is going to the Hall of Fame. I will not Kevin Ollie that. Never mind.
Yo, real
hey, you never
like
know.
Gary Williams.
His story still is, you know, going to be written. So who knows?
Now Nolan Richardson, like, and the funny thing is, like, I've seen his story.
Yo,
his
airline should preclude him from making.
He had to deal with a lot from a social standpoint, and he's done a lot for coaching. He definitely has. I'll give him that. But if we're not talking about what he's done from a social standpoint,
Nolan.
We're just talking about basketball.
Nolan Richardson.
Who are we talking? Oh, Nolan.
I ain't gonna lie to you. And Nolan Richard is one of the most he's one of the most successful college coaches in terms of wins and losses. But what you know what? I would put him before Gary Williams because he did kind of revolutionize the game a bit.
Sweetwater Clifton, Jimmy. I think he gets the history pass. I think he gets the impact pass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like those kind of guys.
His numbers were boo-boo.
He's like, okay, this is a pioneer
type
thing.
But you know what, though? The one thing I can say, as I'm thinking this, like Nolan Richardson has won over 70% of his games, but he also fought for a lot of different social issues. So he made the same Sweetwater Clifton pass.
70% of his barbers.
Somebody gotta help me out, man. Yo, your man
think
Nolan.
About this,
yo,
like, Nolan
never
Richardson
retired from coaching. Like Nolan is available. Why can't he get a job? Yo,
I'm gonna tell you why.
Yo,
if you read his story,
Botswana. He'll coach the Botswana national team.
No, he got blackballed because he were calling people like you know he basically said some things that were racist. He's talking about how he got treated, you know, in Arkansas. And he spoke out on a lot of issues. So he did
a
lot of things from a social standpoint. So he got blackballed. Guy won 70. Put it like this. He had them competing for national championships. Arkansas's basketball team hasn't made the 64, the round of, like, the field of 64, but three times since he left. Like, yo, they're not even relevant anymore. He won a championship with that's not a basketball school, like, so he may be the
irrelevant.
Only one out of everybody you name.
They're irrelevant.
Alonzo Mourning.
Gary Reynolds' career.
Alonzo Mourning. Can Alonzo Mourning be a Hall of Famer?
did he get the kidney pass?
No.
Is that what he got?
He's
a two-time defensive player of the year. He's like a four-time All-Star, I think. I don't know.
You made the All-Star game four times. Andre Iguodala will
seven
be a Hall of Famer.
No, seven times. My bad.
Oh, seven times.
I mean, then you remember times. you gotta remember what he did at Georgetown. I mean, it's not like they won
the
chip or anything.
And also the Olympics.
Here's how we do this. Because I know if y'all look at centers like I look at centers, then we use a triumvirate. It's a little more than a triumvirate. We go David Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing. Is he better or on par with any of those dudes?
No.
No.
You see, he didn't make that when we did the four-way versus. Like, he wasn't on the list.
He can't.
T-Mac 38 says that if Mourning gets in, then T-Mac and Grant Hill both should get in.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah. T-Mac better.
I'm kind of cool with Grant Hill. I know he shouldn't be there, but I respect
T-Mac.
Austin
was about to take a shot at Sarunas Marcellonis, but you have to remember, it's overall. Like, he was like the first Soviet player in the NBA. He won the Lithuanian Sportsman of the Year four times. He was the MVP of the European Championships in 95. He only averaged 12.8 and 1.3 steals in the NBA. But he wasn't a bum in the NBA, though, by any
no,
stretch.
No, he wasn't a bum at all.
Barcelona's could ball.
He wasn't no bum.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. We can't just, especially when a guy has more on his resume. Like, Sarunas may have more of a case than some of the other people we're talking about because he played basketball elsewhere and got it in. Now, not American dudes are like, shit, if I played in that league, then I'd be in the Hall of Fame, too. Like, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know why
Sarunas loses out for me? Because I had the blessing, and I thank God for this, to be able to see Dresden Petrovic, and I don't take nobody from that era over dude. Like, dude is it for me. So I compare him to Drazen, and Drazen was having cats confounded. They were sitting in the locker room like, we got to check this dude. And
think about this, though. Listen, all of the stuff that I just said, still not finished. He founded the North European Basketball League, and he was the first commissioner and founded the Lithuanian Basketball League, and he led movement for Lithuania to participate in the 92 Olympic Games. So I think his resume goes way beyond just his play on the court. So And I'm not going to sit here in front and act like I knew all of this before I just read it. So looking at all of this, I feel a whole lot more comfortable with him going into the Basketball Hall of Fame because he did a lot for basketball.
Yeah, I mean,
in Europe.
Here's the thing, Dev. How many All-Star games you said did Zoe make?
Zoe made seven All-Star games. More than
Sharoon has only played 7 years in the league. So, I mean, you know, he averaged about 12 points, so he went on everything else. And when you look at the announcement of all the people that made it, they didn't even mention his NBA career. Like, you didn't mention anything about his NBA career. You're talking about,
They just said he was the first Soviet player in the NBA. Like, that's about
it. Yeah, dude was just,
so,
like,
I mean, that's another
thing.
He was a pioneer for the Soviets. So I can see why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yo, man, my whole point is the whole list we
had
all.
No, basketball is American. We don't want them rushing.
I thought Guy Rogers was already in the Hall of Fame, but that was
Guy Rogers was nice, and shout to Guy Rogers because he was an All-American at Temple. So
shout
I ain't saying nothing slick about him. Yo, my man Sweetwater Clifton should get in just for his name. But let's move on, though.
What else going on?
Because we just had like
a HOF or FOH for like 10 people.
Yeah, man. One thing that's going on is your man Kevin Durant. His 25-plus point scoring streak ended at 41. 41 straight games.
Hey.
Think about that.
But they still won.
He's better than Jordan.
Keep him clean.
Said he's better than Jordan?
He's better than Jordan.
I don't like the fact that they claim that Jordan had the
video
record.
Game.
And then they had to say modern day. Like, come on, man.
Yo,
I'd be trying to write my man Wilt out of the record books. Man.
I think Wilt is scoring 25 right now, wherever he is. Like,
yeah,
getting 25.
I'd be trying to write my man out of the record books, man.
Yeah,
modern
like
day.
They give him no respect.
Wilt put the ball
man.
In the hoop, just like these boys put the ball in the hoop. So.
Modern day. So when's the modern day actually start? Like, what is that, man?
88.
And the thing is, like, we talk about, they put modern day on it. Like, that's supposed to be more impressive. The game is newer. Well, they're shooting three-pointers and stuff. Wilt didn't shoot three-pointers, so he was getting 25, and he was just giving you work in the post. Like,
yo, and that's my point. Like, they do things to try to do that. And it's also, I'm telling you, Nike's behind it. Yo, people think I be joking when I say some of these things, yo, but I be giving y'all game, yo. People don't realize the power that these sneaker companies have in the NBA, man. Like, Nike runs the league.
I'm
going to
keep it a million. I'm going to keep it a million right now. If Pistol Pete had a three-point line, y'all wouldn't be talking about none of these black people. Pistol Pete would have averaged like 70 points a game with a three-point line. They said my man Pistol used to pull up off half court and shoot the ball and
Jerry,
then turn over
Jerry
and
West.
The crowd and talk to people.
Jerry West's long-distance game was nice, too.
Yeah, he had a man, and without a three-point line, that's what I'm saying. Like, George Gervin
shooting out there for no reason.
Had a major three-point game.
Yeah,
there
was
no
benefit to shooting that far besides disrespecting people.
From half court, getting 2 points.
He was just doing it to disrespect people. There was no benefit to it.
Yo, man, it's crazy how they do that. Like, I was looking at a statistic the other day, right, and I was just laughing because they were talking about the whole scoring thing with Kevin Durant, and they said they were talking about scoring 50. And they said that Michael Jordan had 50, like 31 times in his entire career. He had 50. Yo, Wilt had 50 45 times in one season.
Yo, Wilt is stupid, he
has 50 more times in one season than anybody else has in their career. Like,
Wilt is dumb to talk about. Like, his stats are kind of silly. Like, I don't
Yo, man, straight up, man.
No human being can do that.
Yeah, man, but in terms of Kevin Durant and his streak, how impressive is it in the modern day, today's NBA, how impressive is it?
Four in the 100.
You are. You said he ran a 10-4 in the 100?
Yeah, he ran a 10-4 in the 100.
Yo, but back to KD, though, how impressive is it in today's NBA?
I think it's impressive.
Yeah,
people always try to act like, you know, like quoting Chuck Buckley, any knucklehead can score. But that's just not true. I mean, any knucklehead can score on lower levels, but when you get to this level, you know, scoring isn't just something that everybody can do, because if everybody could do it, everybody would do it. So, you know, I kind of hate
when
fans try to diminish that, like, all you can do is score. Okay, but the other dudes can't. So somebody got
to
do it, right?
You know, here's what's hilarious
to
me.
You know, you can always say one thing to those people. They don't count any other stat to determine the game other than scoring. Scoring is what is counted. So anything else that people do contributes to a win, but scoring is at a premium. And I do believe that all players at that level or most players can score, but that's the difference between a Terrence Ross type of dude and a Kevin Durant, who you can pencil in for 20 to 30 points a game. Terrence Ross is going to score 50 once in a season, and then he's going to have 40 games where he scores 8. Because
here's my thing, right?
Yeah, so any knucklehead can score once.
I watch a lot of basketball, right? And to me, it's like, you know, what I'm going to say is probably like, duh. But Kevin Durant and LeBron James are like far and away the two best players in the league. And the reason I say that is because you said that, you know, at this level and against this talent. But like, yo, those two dudes, when I watch them play, look like they're ringers. They look like they come from like the Monstars and they're playing against regular people. Like, I watch OKC games to laugh. Because it's kind of like comedy, because he's like so much better than everybody, including his own team, that it's kind of funny. And it's very impressive, right? It's very impressive. You can clown the league as much as you want for, you know, the limited amount of talent in the league and how watered down it is, but you still got to put the basket in the hoop, and you still got to have the endurance to do what he's doing. Like, yo, it's tiring to score that kind of the way he was scoring. Like, he's a machine.
Yeah.
That's what I tell people, man. It's difficult to score 40 by yourself in a gym. And everybody's just acting like, well, he's supposed to do that.
Some of that stuff, it gets to a point where it's not even about him actually scoring 25. It's the mental toughness that you have to have after you've done it for 20 games, and now here comes game number 21. Here comes game number 23. You don't feel well. You don't feel like it. I don't feel like playing basketball today. You got to go out and put up 25. Like, that's kind of what impresses me. Not even so much that he did it, but, yo, he's done it consistently. That's what they pencil in for him every night when he steps on the court. That's impressive. There's a couple other guys that look like they're playing on a Fisher-Price run. Quietest kid, the little El DeBarge dude out in Golden State, he makes it look easy, too, because he takes some stupid shots.
Yeah, you always find a way. You always find a way to give him props, yo. We could be talking about anything, and you find a way to give him. That's like your favorite player, yo.
He looks silly, man. Like, those shots shouldn't go.
And the crazy part is, like I always call him, he a game shooter, man, because he don't make shots like that when you're just watching footage of him practice. And he lost a shooting contest to Mark Jackson, who can't shoot.
Yeah, Mark Jackson can't
shoot. But when he get in the game, he hitting them like a big
Yo, he
face.
Like need a hand in his
anyway,
face.
Anyway, did y'all hear what LeBron said about KD when they asked him about the MVP?
Yeah.
Now let me ask y'all this.
Yeah.
Let me frame this one because I framed the question for the people on our social network pages earlier. Now when asked about if he thought Kevin Durant was the MVP front runner. LeBron said, I will say he's the most consistent basketball player as far as the MVP this year. He's put up some great numbers. He said, I think KD has had one heck of a season. And, you know, if he's rewarded with the MVP, it would be great. It would be awesome for him, for his family. He played the MVP-type basketball. I don't really get caught up in what people say. Yeah, right. At the end of the day, they have their own votes, and they go from there. So this is what I asked. I gave everybody, like, a multiple choice. I was like, is LeBron James, A, great sport, B, just being honest, C, just telling fans what they want to hear, so we'll call him a great sport, D, is he sunning Kevin Durant, or E, none of the above? What do you guys think of his comments?
Can I pick more than one?
Huh?
Go ahead.
Can I pick more than one?
Go ahead. What do you think?
C and B.
So you think he's telling fans what they want to hear so we can, you know, he can continue to craft his image?
And on the D side, he's sunning Kev.
I think I kind of agree with you. Like, and this is not a LeBron thing. I rarely take what athletes say at face value because especially the ones who are in positions like LeBron James, who is one of the greatest brands sports has ever seen, and because of the mistakes that he's already made in the public and in the media, I think LeBron is aware of every single comment that he's making anytime he's making a comment. Like I was telling you guys earlier, I was watching the LeBron James interview with Steve Smith. It was an hour interview during All-Star Weekend, and I really thought it was a great interview. But I would still be a little naive if, you know, if I was to sit here and say that that interview and his responses and the way that that they made him out in the interview wasn't crafted, you know, as a part of his brand ambassadorship. Like, I think LeBron is to the point where he's smart enough to know that everything he says has an effect on his brand.
Moves the needle.
So I think he
it moves
has
the
to
needle.
Look like, and he might, like, some of the stuff, like, watching his interview, I was starting to be a little convinced, like, dude might genuinely be that dude. But then when you think about how much money is involved, I'm like, I can't take any of these dudes at face value because they probably go home, probably curse about everybody, that bull bum, this and that. But I think I agree with you because some of the comments kind of seemed like he was kind of talking down on him. If he gets the MVP, that would be great. Great for his family, you know. Great for his dog. Like what are you talking about? I think the king was sounding him a little bit.
Yeah, he sounded him a little bit. Like, let me ask you guys a question. We got something on Twitter. Says Kevin Durant ended his streak on purpose so people could stop talking about it. You think there's any truth to that?
Nah.
Yes.
Okay,
nah.
One yes, one no. All right, explain yourself, gentlemen.
I just think that as much as these players go on, it goes back to my same comment that I just made. As much as these players go on TV and say, quote-unquote, the right things, they care about these records. They care about all of that stuff. They just try to go on TV and deflect and say, I don't care about that. I just care about winning. It's about my team. They say that because they've been conditioned to say that, because they know that you fans out here will get mad at everybody who says something honest. If Kevin Durant goes out there and say, hell yeah, I wanted that streak, and I wanted to put it out of reach for the next cat, y'all will be, oh, he's selfish, he's this and that.
This is why Richard Sherman has endeared himself to a lot of people, because whether you agree or disagree with a lot of his feelings and statements, you got to like the guy for speaking his mind, which he does. Most guys are going to say whatever it is just to get you away from him, man.
Why do you believe that, you know, he really wanted to stop the streak? Who the hell wants to stop a streak?
I think that Kevin Durant, in fact, I know this I'm pretty certain this is fact. Kevin Durant cares about shooting percentages and stats. Like, I've heard that from people that know him firsthand. He likes, you know, being a member of that, you know, high 80s free throw percentage, high 40s field goal. And
well, you remember he said he doesn't heave up last-second shots at the quarter because he'll want to mess up his shooting percentage.
Yeah, he cares. He cares. And I think that getting this streak was wearing on his nerves. And to get it, he's got it. It's done, and he saw an out. He saw an out. He said, "We're playing a bum team. I'm up. I don't have to play the fourth quarter. I could rest my leg. I'm good. I'm cool." Yeah, I think he won it out. I think he won it out.
It's only 25 points. It's not like the streak was 40. He averages more than 25 points, so I don't think.
It's funny because
the streak is less than his average. So first of all, I don't know why the streak was that big of a deal. It's less than his average.
Here's what's funny, because you know you guys disagree on that, but I saw a lot of people say that they think he ended it on purpose, and I saw both sides of it. I also saw Tony Parker say that he thinks that Pop is going to throw a game on purpose to kind of like, you know, mess up the mojo that the Spurs are having right now. So
I believe
Pop would
do that because
I
definitely see all his starters sitting for no reason. You have to think that there's validity to that, like.
But
Pop,
what do you guys
Pop
think about
not,
the Spurs?
Yo, he will not let Tony Parker and Tim Duncan and them travel to the city they're going to. That's how much he wants to throw games sometimes.
Yeah, here's my thing, right? I am impressed with them thoroughly just because of how last season ended. Because, yo, I don't know how you come back from that. I don't know how you come back from game 6 and compete in game seven the way they did. And then go after losing game seven, like, yo, you're right back at it. Like, so props to them for that. But I'm going to ask both of you gentlemen, what do you think the Spurs can do in the playoffs? Like, will they have trouble in the playoffs, or will they, this train continue to roll?
I'm at a point where I'm going to stop doubting those dudes, man. Like, even I don't really think they're going to run through the playoffs. Like, I'll say it like this and let B. Austin go. I'm not sure if they'll run through the Western Conference playoffs, but I think that in the Western Conference, they have the best chance at beating the Miami Heat if Miami comes out of the East. Now, I'm not sure they're going to get there, but if they get, I think they have the best chance. So I kind of think if the Spurs don't make it, the Heat might walk to another championship.
B. Austin.
I place my faith in the hands of men on a couple of occasions, and Manu Ginobili was one of those, and he completely shot my heart out of the back of my chest. And so I just don't believe I respect Pop to the highest degree. I think he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. I think Pop will I think he could coach circles around Phil Jackson. I believe it. I'm a pop believer. I respect it. What he gets out of his talent, I respect what he gets out of his talent, because I don't think at this stage of the game that's a very athletically talented team, but they're just consummate professionals. They're high IQ, and they know what it takes to win. When they come up against you, and they come up against a team that isn't mentally susceptible to being punished, if you will, I think they're going to have a tough time matching up athletically. I just think that the window is closed, and I just think we are seeing the residuals of greatness with them, and they're able to walk through a regular season the way that they are because of coaching and because of their discipline. But I don't think athletically they have it.
Okay, cool. That's fair. One of the teams that people think will come out of the West is the Clippers. Last question I have before we get out of here, gentlemen, is this. A lot of people do, though. Doc Rivers, the Clippers coach.
They stupid.
He says that Blake Griffin is number two in the MVP race.
I'm not mad at that. That's his guy, number one.
I'm both mad at that.
Yeah, that's his guy. And if you look at what Blake Griffin has been able to do in Chris Paul's absence, and then when Chris Paul returned, I don't agree with that, but I don't think it's crazy. I don't think he's out of his mind. I think that the number three and number two race for MVP is closer than people would think between him and LeBron. So I'm not mad at that.
Okay. How about you, Dennis?
Me? I think
stay away from the crack, which I think is pretty good advice, unless you –
I mean, it sounds like crack. I get what B. Austin is saying, and I can basically agree. I don't know, man. I still think at times what LeBron James does gets diminished because at this point we expect it from him.
So
you definitely think Kevin Durant is number one this season as far as MVP, and I definitely think LeBron is number two. But I'm not going to get all crazy upset with Doc for going out for
no
a guy
doubt.
Like that, because Blake,
right.
He's number three on my list, so he definitely had a work.
It's a fair point, and it's funny because we brought up Wilt, but I think that what you just said about LeBron is going to become, you know, the reality for KD as well. People are just going to start expecting him to score 30 a night, and, you know, sometimes guys are so good that they're their worst enemy. It's like, yo, we expect you to. Like, we expect Melo to put up 30. So if you don't put up 30, like, yo, you have 26 is an off night. Like, who does that?
JoJo.
Anyway.
JoJo.
The JoJo.
Just give it to Manny.
Who's the JoJo award?
Give it to Manny for something he didn't even do recently, man. Manny Pacquiao for singing that song. You should be ashamed of yourself. We ain't got to put
him
down, Mike. We got to get out of here.
No, my vote is Kerry Rhodes.
Two people that ain't mean nothing.
On that note, I'm getting out of here. I am not getting attacked by that mafia. Thanks for joining us again in the War Room. Good folks. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, those on Facebook and Twitter, all the calls who chimed in. Shout out to John Ryans for the calls we didn't get to. We apologize. We'll see you next week. Tune in next week, same time, same place, live right here on the new War Room Sports Podcast Network. You know, you heard that, War Room Sports Podcast Network. For some more great sports talkers, we'll have a lot of different shows. We'll take another journey around the world of sports. So until then, enjoy your week, and we'll see you right back here next time. Catch our conversations, Facebook, Twitter, at War Room Sports. And don't forget, warroomsportstv.com for all video content. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We'll see you chumps on top.
Know the blueprint. Yo, every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, B. Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial. Call it 323-0012. If you're going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, let's talk sports. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip-hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Portrait secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us.
War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.